I'm Phil C.
And I'm Lynn.
And together,
we're Roman Oz.
Real interviews.
With real people.
On location.
With a great mix of Aussie music.
As requested by the people we interview.
Follow us on Facebook.
Or check us out, romanoz.com.au.
So, Phil, what's on the show this week?
Well, Lynn, we are first of all going to be talking with Jeff Deere from Checkweight.
Yes.
Now, we had an email from a chap from Victoria. His name's Rod.
Right.
And Rod asks the question, should I tow with my water tanks full?
That's an interesting one.
It is a very interesting question, okay? I would assume straight away you would.
Yes.
But in the email, Rod said, well, why am I dragging all this weight to where I need to go when I don't need the water until I get there?
Yeah, that's true.
So that made a lot of sense. So his question in the email was, should I tow with my water tanks full? And he also said, seeing as if I've asked you a question, will you play me a song?
Oh, okay.
And I thought, well, that's pretty fair. It's not really a request program, but look, at the end of the day, we always have an Aussie song from whoever we speak to. So because Rod has sent us in a question, should I tow with my water tanks full? He said, can you please play me Galleries of Pink Galahs by John Williamson?
Oh, lovely. Very good song, that one.
Absolutely fantastic. From the Mally Boy album. Then straight after Jeff from Checkweight, I'm going to be talking with Joan at the Henry Lawson Museum.
Ah, yes. That's a very interesting museum, that one.
In Gulgong.
Yes.
Absolutely fascinating. And Joan, what a wealth of information
she was. She is.
Oh, goodness me. She gave me so much information that I thought to myself, I thought I knew a little bit about Henry Lawson, but when I came out of there, I thought, now I know a lot about Henry Lawson. Okay. I mean, I thought he was born, I thought he was buried in Grenfell.
No, he's buried in Sydney.
He's buried in Sydney. And Joan tells us that when I said he's buried in Grenfell. She said, no, he was born in Grenfell. But he's in fact buried in Sydney. So I learned something there. And then she's asked me for a song, which it was by somebody that I actually purchased the CD there because the song she asked me for, you know, it was a song that I didn't actually have it because when she said to me she wanted to hear a song and it was called, let me just have a look, it was called Scots of the Riverina.
Is it actually a poem from
it's a
Henry
poem.
Lawson?
Apparently it's a poem by Henry Lawson, which has been adapted by Song and Music. And I'm trying to think of who it was that that did this. But it's on here, so we're going to actually be playing that for her, Scots of the Riverina. The Bush by Moonlight is the name of the album, words by Henry Lawson. So I thought, that's pretty clever. And then straight after that, we're going to be finishing up with Highway Dave.
Ah, yes, from Gulgong as well.
He's from Gulgong. Well, he's no longer at Gulgong.
No, unfortunately.
Sadly, when we spoke to him, we met him at Gulgong. He used to be the caretaker at the Gulgong showground.
Yep.
And what a fabulous guy. His reputation definitely preceded him.
Yes.
Because, like, when I first met him, I'd never ever met him until that day. And I went up to him and said, Highway Dave. And he said, do I know you? And I go, no, but everybody else does. So I thought that was kind of clever.
Yes.
Anyway, look, apart from all of this, we've also got a fabulous selection of music
as requested by the people we interview.
So, Lynn, what do you think?
On with the show.
Galleries of pink galahs, crystal nights with diamond stars, apricots preserved in jars. That's my home. Land of oceans in the sun, purple hazes, river gum. Breaks your heart when rain won't come. It breaks your heart. It takes a harsh and cruel drought to sort the weaker saplings out. It makes room for stronger trees. Maybe that's what life's about. Winter's come, the hills are brown. Shops are closed, the blinds are down. Everybody's leaving town. They can't go on. The south wind through veranda gores winds and bangs the homestead doors. A mother curses dusty floors and feels alone. Trucks and bulk bins filled with rust. Boy leaves home to make a crust. A father's dreams reduced to dust. But he must go on. Tortured red gums aren't a shame. Sunburned country wisely named. Chisel plowed and wire claimed. But never, never, never tamed. Swirls a paper high. Same old news of further dry. Of broken clouds just passing by. That's my home. Land of oceans in the sun. Purple hazes, river gum. Breaks your heart when rain won't come. It breaks your heart.
Phil C here, listeners, and this is Raymond Oz, and we've got Jeff Diath on the phone today again, and he's going to be talking to us all about towing with your water tanks full. Now, this was a request, or an email, I should say, from a chap named Rod. How are you going today, Jeff?
Oh, great, Phil. We've had a bit of rain this week, but as they say, a rainy day at the beach is better than a sunny day in the office.
Absolutely fabulous. And I guess all this rain kind of segues into what we're going to be talking about, water tanks and full, because I do see people capturing water from their awnings and so on. I've never done it myself, but this particular chap, Rod, from Victoria, wants to know about his water tanks and can he travel with them full?
And it's a question that I get asked quite frequently. And I suppose the answer is a little bit controversial sometimes. You see it asked on a lot of forums, and the theory is that a caravan should be able to be towed empty of water or full of water.
Okay.
Our general recommendation, and I say it as a general recommendation because I think each individual can be a little bit different.
Right.
But the reason I suggest that you actually tow with water tanks full, 90% of the time, are several. So the first one is that if you actually think about the design of your caravan, and we'll assume in this stage that your water tanks are in front of the axles, so between the axles and the tow ball.
Right.
And most caravans are designed that way. If you've got an older caravan that's got a water tank at the back, then maybe, you might run with that one empty, but it really depends on how the caravan's balanced. So if you think about, we're towing a big box down the road, because basically that's what a caravan is.
Right.
With wheels generally in the middle. So it's a little bit of a seesaw.
Okay.
If you get a little bit of wind or, you know, a lot of wind in some cases, and the box starts to sway, where do you want the weight? You want the weight down low to give you stability.
Yes.
And water tanks are placed in the middle, usually just over or in front of the axles of the caravan.
Right.
So it's actually giving you stability weight, you know, and stability down low.
Okay.
You know, and if you look at any picture of a caravan, we've got air conditioners, we've got solar panels on the top.
Mm-hmm.
We've got a little bit of weight at the top.
Right.
And if you think, you know, motorsport and things like that, what do they do in motorsport? They try and get the center of gravity down as low as possible.
Yes.
With four-wheel drives and caravans, we sort of tend to do the opposite. We keep adding weight up high.
Up high, yep.
So, yeah, so if you're on a windy day or if you're on a windy road, the more weight you have at the top, the more likely your caravan is to, you know, is to sway a little bit or to rock backwards and forward.
Okay.
Most of the phone calls I get from people who go, oh, look, I've just picked up this caravan and I towed it home and it just, it's uncontrollable.
Right.
And I'll say, well, is the caravan empty? And they go, yes. So did you fill the water tanks? No.
Mm-hmm.
So there's no weight
there's
in the
no
box.
There's no real weight.
They haven't loaded anything. Yeah.
Okay.
Look, some dealerships will fill the water tanks for you before you leave, but I found that a lot don't.
Okay.
So my general recommendation is if you're picking up a new caravan especially, ask about are the water tanks full and get them to fill them up before you tow it home.
Okay.
And I think you'll find that a major difference.
Okay.
And the major difference is that it's putting weight on the tow ball, which will give you stability.
Okay.
So I suppose it depends on the caravan design, but 90% of the time I would say that Rod should be driving with his caravan water tanks full.
Okay. Because a lot of people I talk to say, oh, look, I don't need the water until I get wherever I'm going. So they only have a little bit of water in their tanks because they're feeling as water equals weight equals fuel consumption. So a lot of people I speak to travel light until they really need to fill up because it's, you know, you're potentially adding 200 more kilos to your caravan, aren't you, roughly? So what about with half the water in? Is that a good thing or a bad thing? I would imagine it's bad because that water's now sloshing around. Is that not going to affect the stability of the van?
I it could. And a lot of caravans now, some of the tanks can be baffled. And there has been recommendations in the past, either full or empty, not half.
Okay.
I think the reality is, though, you know, if you've been somewhere, you might have used half the water as well. Anyway,
of course.
So you're driving to the next town.
Yeah.
So I think you just understand that as you're using that water, it's changing your tow ball weight and it's changing the dynamics of your caravan.
Okay.
One of the things you did mention was that, you know, the whole save fuel argument.
Yes.
I mean, I get in trouble from my wife every now and then, the good Jules, when she says, I say to people, you know, if you're worried about fuel economy, then stay at home.
Right.
But the reality is that if you're, you know, towing, you know, say you've got your Land Cruiser and you're up there about 6 ton, I'm sure, Phil, in your combination when you get your new van.
Yes, I will be, for
so
sure.
So is 200 kilograms of 6 ton actually going to make a lot of difference?
Well, not to me, but I mean, there's a lot of frugal travelers out there.
Well, if you look at it a percentage rate, and I've sort of done a bit of an analysis on this.
Yep.
So, for example, say your cruiser's, you know, what's it do? 15 liters per 100 kilometers when you're not towing.
Yep. Roughly.
And you hook a caravan on, and now it's doing 20 liters per 100 kilometers.
Yep.
Okay.
Yes.
So you're doing 15 empty, and that added weight of the caravan, it's just increased it by a third.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Yep.
So it's 5 extra liters per 100 kilometers. And these are just, you know, random figures off the top of my head, not actuals.
Yes, of course.
So if you reduce the weight of the caravan by 200 Ks, it's only that small percentage of the weight of the caravan that's improving, not the overall. So I've worked out that, you know, before fuel prices went up, it was probably 80 cents to a dollar per 100 kilometres that you may save by emptying your water tanks. Now, it might be about $1.20 now with fuel prices going through the roof.
Yep, yep.
But so is that $1.20 every 100 Ks worth the potential for your caravan to sway and have an accident? So my general recommendation, and I say general because everybody is a little bit different, is that I would say not.
Okay.
You know, so I think you should travel with water tanks full.
Okay.
That's why when I weigh, I always ask the clients to fill their water tanks.
Yep.
And we basically have a worst case scenario.
Okay. Okay. Well, there you go, Rod. That answers your questions. You should tow. I say should. Repeat the word should tow with your water tanks full and not worry about whether or not it's going to cost you an extra dollar. What was it? The ballpark figure, 80 cents a dollar per 100 for that little bit of extra weight.
And obviously everybody's a little bit different depending on, you know, the size of their vehicle or their and the size of their caravan.
Yep.
But, I think it's hard to compare too because I've had people say to me, you know, oh, but I went up with my water tanks full and when I came back down, I had them empty and I saved a heap of fuel. And I say, well, were you going uphill? Was it windy? What's the difference in the circumstances?
Yes. You know?
So,
of course.
You know, it's very hard to do a comparison with full and empty on exactly the same road at the same speed. So,
Look, I always travel with mine full. I do recall once traveling and, like you said, I'd used half my tank or half my tanks of water. And I noticed a big difference in the stability of the van. And I always travel around about the same speed, so it's not like I was going any faster or any slower, but definitely I could feel that it wasn't as solid and true on the road with half the tanks full as compared to having both the tanks full. So my opinion is for Rod is to have them full, and I'm saying yours is probably the same.
Yeah. I'll just add to some of the hybrid caravans have the water tank at the back.
Yep.
And that's because the hybrids are very heavy at the front.
Okay.
So that water at the back actually lifts a bit of weight off the tow ball.
Right.
So if you decide to not have the water tank full and save that fuel, then you're increasing your tow ball weight and the effect on the vehicle.
Okay.
So, So you look at the design of your caravan or your hybrid or your camper trailer and load it accordingly.
Okay, fabulous. Well, there you go. That answers Mr. Rod's email from Victoria. Thank you so much for your time again today, Jeff. Now, we've got to play you a song to end the segment. But before we do that, I'm just thinking, because we've been talking all about weights and, you know, the difference in having water in your tank and not, you just did mention tow ball and how it can affect with some of the hybrid caravans. Could we talk about tow ball weights next week?
Look, I could talk for an hour on tow ball weights, but we'll keep it a bit shorter. But, yeah, I think that's a great subject to talk about, Phil.
Okay, fabulous.
We'll do that next week.
Fabulous. There you go, listeners. So we're going to be doing tow ball weights next week. Before we hang up the phones with Rod, not with Rod, with Jeff, what can I play for you? What song can I play for you, Jeff?
Well, I think this is one that a lot of caravanners and campers can relate to. Under the Milky Way by The Church.
Fabulous song. And I know how fabulous it feels when you're sitting beside a campfire out in the middle of nowhere, no street lights around, and just staring up at the Milky Way. Great song selection, Jeff, as always. And it's a pleasure speaking with you. And I look forward to next week's discussion on tow ball weights. Thanks for your time, Jeff.
Right. Have a great week, Phil, and travel safe.
I will. There you go, listeners. Mr. Jeff Diaf from Check Weight. And we'll be back with more Roman Oz straight after The Church Under the Milky Way.
Sometimes when this place gets kind of empty, sound of their breath fades with the light. I think about the loveless fascination under the Milky Way tonight. Love Manhattan down Memphis. Lower the curtain down on Rye. I got no time for private consultation under the Milky Way tonight. Wish I knew what you were looking for. Might have known what you would find. And it's something quite peculiar. Something shimmering and white. It leads you here. Your destination under the Milky Way tonight. Wish I knew what you were looking for. Might I know what you were finding. Wish I knew what you.
So here we are, listeners. Phil C here, Raymond Oz, and we are in Gulgong at the Henry Lawson Museum. And this is one of the volunteers, Joan. How are you going, Joan?
Good, thank you.
Well, thanks for being on the program with us today. Now, could you tell us a little bit about this fabulous museum?
Okay, well, the museum was formed back in the 70s.
Right.
When the Salvation Army was selling their redundant hall for $2,000. And a bunch of locals got together and bought it and decided to celebrate Henry Lawson's life.
Right.
Henry was actually born in Grenfell, but his family were just following the gold rush over there.
Okay.
And they came back when he was 3 months old.
Okay.
And he grew up on a farm locally and lived in Gulgong during the gold rush years in the 1870s.
Right.
And all of his stories about the gold fields are written about Gulgong.
Okay. So when somebody comes to the museum, because there's so much photographic work here and things, can you give us a bit of an overview of what they're likely to see?
Well, what we tell them when they come in is this is a walk through Henry's life.
Okay.
And it starts in that corner with the birth of his mother.
Okay.
His mother was a local lady.
Right.
The daughter of the manager down at Guntawang.
Right.
And his father was a Norwegian sailor that jumped ship in Melbourne and followed the gold rush up here.
Right, okay.
And they met in Gulgong, and he was twice her age, so he was quite a bit older.
Uh-huh.
And they got married, and they lived both locally and on their property.
Right.
And they had four children.
Okay.
There was Henry and his brother and two twin girls,
okay.
One of whom died.
Right.
And as you go around the museum, if you go in a clockwise direction, it goes chronologically through his life.
Right.
We have a number of original paintings that go back to when the museum first started and we sponsored local art contests.
Okay.
And we kept the winning paintings, and they were very often local. There's some beautiful paintings. That one is one of the Gold Rush.
Okay.
Which is what it must have looked like during the gold rush.
During the gold rush.
You can see all the Chinese people and the guys on horses and everybody walking and carrying their stuff.
So when was the gold rush?
1872.
1872. So that's what it would have looked like.
Yeah.
Okay. So who would have... Oh, it's up there. Who painted that? That was The Roaming Days. That was the name of the poem.
Eileen Mack.
Eileen Mack, yeah.
Who's a local painter.
Okay.
And, yeah.
So as we continue along his life, so we've got this section here, the formative years.
He went to school at Eurunderi in a bark school that his father built.
Okay.
His father worked as a carpenter in addition to chasing the gold. And this painting here is one of a series that was done about his poems, and it's very much what the school would have looked like, and that's Henry's poem, The Old Bark School,
right,
with it.
Okay.
And you have stuff you can look at here. This is a copy of a school book that was donated to us by a classmate of Henry's.
Okay.
And this is what it looked like when, see if I can find some of these beautiful things, what the kids had to do in their school book and the handwriting.
So this is an original book from back then?
Yeah. This is actually a reproduction of
okay,
it,
okay.
But the original one is in the glass
case.
Oh,
in the glass case, yeah. That makes perfect sense.
Yeah. You'll find that all of our original things were only displaying photocopies because they're too precious.
Too
they
precious.
They could never be replaced.
Absolutely. Never be replaced.
Yeah.
So we're up to his youth now, Joan.
Yes, his youth was spent, his early youth, until he was 16 in Gulgong and Mudgee.
Right.
And his parents' marriage broke up about then.
Okay.
And his mother went to Sydney, and Henry stayed with his father for a while, and they worked as carpenters together,
okay.
And they
yes.
went to the mountains, and they built a few sort of wooden buildings around in the mountains.
Okay. All right. So let's continue on.
Yes.
The influential years?
Yes, this is when he started writing.
Uh-huh.
Now, he was first published by his mother, who has to be a part of the story because she was one of the early suffragettes and,
okay.
and a really strong woman that sort of came out for women's rights.
Right.
And she published his first book,
uh-huh.
and Angus and Robertson published other books.
Okay.
And he lived as a contemporary with Banjo Patterson.
Yes.
And they had debates about social issues in the Bulletin, and they answered each other in poetry.
Okay.
So, but Banjo was a squatter's son and a lawyer, and
yes.
very much upper class, where
yes.
Henry was born in the tent on the gold fields and very much stuck up for the working class man his
yes.
whole life.
So their poetry, I guess, reflects that, would you think? Because Banjo's talking about you know, meandering through the country on a horse like Clancy of the Overflow. And a lot of the things that Henry wrote were, would you say they were darker or just
much darker?
And would that have been influenced by where he lived and came from, or was that just his life in general?
The other influence that might have been, when he was a youth,
yes,
he had a really bad ear infection, and it resulted in deafness.
Okay.
Not sort of profound deafness, but significant deafness.
Okay.
And I think in the 1870s, deafness would have not been any fun.
That would have definitely not.
You know, at which I think from his writing, he was quite depressed.
Mm-hmm.
Probably because he sort of had trouble holding jobs, and you know, he was from one job to the other, and he did have visits in mental hospitals. And
yes, and he also had some issues with alcohol. Is that correct?
Yes, he was definitely an alcoholic.
An alcoholic, yes. So would that have come, do you feel, or from, I guess, his, the way he grew up, or when did he first turn to that? When he became deaf?
Well, he first turned to it, I think, as a young adult.
Okay, okay.
As soon as he was out on his own, he had, you know, family issues, and it all led to alcohol.
Yes, yeah. Well, that was the easy escape, I guess, back in those days. All right, so what have we got through here, Joan? Is this another section, or is there more in here you'd like to discuss with us?
Well,
we've got the later years. We haven't mentioned that, yes.
Well, when we get to the women in his life, I told you about his mother.
Yes.
But there were a number of women in his life.
Okay.
We had a display back in December and January from an artist from Candace, Fiona McDonald, that was sponsored by the Arana Arts to do a project on women. And
yes.
She came here and she researched. We have a lot of research material here. And she picked 8 women from his life and she wrote their story.
Right.
And she silkscreened their heads on tea towels, and we had them strung across like a clothesline, like the women pegged up tea towels.
Yes.
And there were eight women, but there were a number of them across the room like that.
Yep.
When it went, we sort of acquired one set of the women, which is hanging in the back.
In the back room. Yep. So okay, should we go
so
through
we can
to
go
the back
look,
room?
Look yeah. at the women.
Yes.
This area of the display is about his mother,
right.
And these are the other women in his life.
Okay.
And this is a little blurb that tells you all about the women.
Okay.
They're just quite incredible women.
Okay. The Dawn Club.
The Dawn Club, yeah. That's what Fiona called her display.
The Dawn Club.
Okay. Because Henry's mother had a magazine that was published in Sydney called The Dawn.
Okay.
And it was about women's rights.
Okay. Okay.
And what the tea towels say, I am not Henry Lawson's mother. What that means is I don't want to be remembered as Henry Lawson's mother. I want to be remembered in my own right.
I see. Okay. And these other ones, what were the relationships with these other ladies like? For example, do you know or...?
Some of them I can say straight off. This one was his landlady.
Okay.
And she had a lot when he lived in Sydney in his later years. And she had a lot to do with trying to keep him sober and looking after him.
And that's Isabella Boyes, right?
Yeah. And the first one is his mother.
It is his mother, yes.
And the second one, Mary Gilmore.
Mary Gilmore.
He and Mary were, when he was quite young, they were boyfriend-girlfriend sort of thing.
Yes.
And his mother broke it up because she thought Mary wasn't suitable. And it turns out Mary turned out fantastic. She sort of ended up being Dame Mary Gilmore for her contributions as a writer.
Aha, okay. Big mistake there,
Mrs. Lawson. When he married his wife, I think she was a little bit of a strong woman, not as much as his mother, and they eventually broke up. And his daughter, who was just a gorgeous girl, she never married.
Okay.
She probably had enough of men in her life.
So that's Bertha, his daughter.
Bertha, his daughter.
Okay.
And he had 2 children. He had a son and a daughter, and neither one ever had children.
Okay.
So there's no direct descendants.
Ah. So what are we looking at in here? This is the typewriter he would have wrote things?
This is the same as the typewriters he would have used, yes. Although most of his manuscripts were just scribbled on paper. I can show you his manuscripts.
Uh-huh.
We have an original out.
An original manuscript.
Yeah. But he had a grandnephew who was his brother's descendant that turned out to be a painter. Uh-huh. And we have a few of his paintings. These two are Peter Lawson paintings.
Okay, I didn't realize that. I've learned something today, Joan. It's a fascinating place, and I must admit, I've been to the other museum in Yeovil, the Banjo Paterson one. We have been to, where was he buried? Where's he buried? I'm trying to think.
Grenfell.
Yes, we've been there to the burial site. Is it?
No, he's buried in Waverley in Sydney.
Oh. Oh. Okay. So what? I wonder what that was in Grenfell.
That's probably they claim he was born there.
Ah.
He was born in the tent on the goldfields at Grenfell.
Okay. All right. Well, we've learned something more.
And he died in Sydney.
Okay. So it's a fabulous, fascinating place.
Would you like to read a little letter or a poem, maybe?
This is
a manuscript of the Soldier Birds.
The Soldier Birds.
And this is one of those brochures we have about the Dawn Club. So if you'd like to take that with you, you're welcome.
I'll take that. Absolutely.
But most of his poems were written in pubs and given to the landlord, and he read them. They were read verbally until they wore out, and then they were used to start a fire or line a drawer or whatever.
Do you know any of his poems off by heart?
No.
No? Okay. I'd say it's lovely to hear you recite one.
There's a beautiful one he wrote. We had a manuscript donated by a local guy in Mudgee who was a friend of Henry's son.
Right.
And it's called To Jim.
To Jim?
Yeah. And it's the most beautiful poem. It was written later in his life. I gaze upon my son once more with eyes and heart that tire, and solemnly he stands before the screens drawn around the fire. With hands behind, clasped hand in hand, now loosely and now fast, just as his father used to stand for generations past. A fair and slight and childish form with big brown thoughtful eyes, God help him for a life of storm and stress before him lies. A wanderer and a gypsy wild, I've learned the world and know, for I was such another child, many years ago. But in these dreamy eyes of him, there is no hint of doubt. I wish that you could tell me, Jim, the things you dream about. Dream on, my son, that all is true, and things not what they seem. 'Twill be a better day, bitter day for you, when wakened from your dream. You are a child of field and flood, but with the gypsy strains, a strong Norwegian sailor's blood is running through your veins. Be true and slander never stings. Be straight and all may frown. You'll have the strength to grapple things that dragged your father down. These lines I write with bitter tears and falling heart and hand. But you will read in after years and you will understand. You'll hear the slander of the crowd. They'll whisper tales of shame. But days will come when you'll be proud to hear your father's name. But oh, beware of bitterness when you are wrong, my lad. I wish I had the faith in them, the women that I had. 'Tis better far, for I have felt the sadness in my song, to trust all men and still be wrong, than to trust none and wrong. Be generous and still do good, and banish while you live the specter of ingratitude that haunts the ones who give. But if the crisis comes at length, that your future may be marred, strike hard, my son, with all your strength. For your own self's sake, strike hard.
Fabulous. Thank you so much.
Okay.
That's been wonderful. Now, what would you say, just before we wind this up, how much time do you think? I know I always ask this and people say, how long is a piece of string? But, I mean, you'd have to give yourself at least a minimum amount of time to be able to absorb what's in here. So what would you think, an hour, 2 hours?
Oh, look, If you really skim it, you might do it in half an hour.
Yes.
But I think the average is 45 minutes to an hour.
Okay, okay. And what are the costs to come in?
If you have a concession card, it's $5. Uh-huh. If you're a full-on young person, it's $7.
Okay, fabulous. Well, we're going to wind this up now. And I always do with a famous or popular Australian song. Now, what would be your most favourite?
Well, we normally play some music for our visitors as they go by from this CD or something.
Right.
Similar, but this is the words of Henry Lawson.
Okay.
The music of Ade Monsborough, and the voice of Michael Coltrane.
Okay.
And probably the most moving one on here is the Scots of the Riverina.
Okay. All right. Well, we're going to play that for you right now. Thank you so much, Joan.
Thank you.
Stick around, listeners, for more of Roaming Oz, and we'll be back straight after the Scots of the Riverina.
Andy's gone to battle now, against Drought the Red Marauder. Our Andy's gone with cattle now, across the Queensland border. He's left us in dejection now, our hearts with him are roving. It's dull on this election now, since Andy went a-droving. The gates are out of order now, in storms the riders rattle. For far across the border now, our Andy's gone with cattle. Poor Auntie's looking thin and white, and Uncle's cross with worry, and poor old Blucher howls all night since Andy left Macquarie. Now shall wear the cheerful face in times when things are slackest, and who shall whistle round the place when fortune frowns her blackest? Oh, who shall cheek the squatter now when he comes round us snarling? His tongue is growing hotter now since Andy crossed the Darling. Oh, may the showers in torrents fall and all the tanks run over, and may the grass grow green and tall in pathways of the drover, and may good angels send the rain on desert stretches sandy, and when the summer comes again, God grant will bring us and
an Aussie we all know, where the western breezes blow, from north to south he's known far and wide. Henry Lawson was his name, but he never rose to fame until he crossed beyond the great divide. In a little place called Grenfell, when the gold was flowing free and the miners and their money came and went, in 1867, when the town was on the spree, Henry Lawson, he was born there in a tent.
He grew into a lanky lad when Gulgong was his home. His mind was bright, he had those itchy feet. He wrote a string of verses of the days he used to roam, from the dusty track out back to City Street. He drifted with the drovers across the western plains, and he waltzed Matilda down the Loughlin side. From the Barcoo to the Murray, in droughts and flooding rains, oh, the bush was both his mother and his bride. He passed by plain and mountain and by burning desert sand, by shearing shed and lonely cattle camp. And when the beer was flowing, he was there to lend a hand with the mates that shared his life upon the tramp. He sang of wild bush brumbies, of teamsters and their teams, of outer tracks that only bushmen know. He saw the mail coach coming by plains and mountain streams, and he wrote about the lights of Cobb and Co. He told of lonely men out back and women of the West, of folk that fought to live in factory town. But the swaggies of the old bush school were those he knew the best, where the waters of the Darling wander down. He boiled his billy back of Burke and starved in City Park. He penned his poems in a shaky scrawl. But of all the old bush poets that have passed and left their mark, Henry Lawson was the greatest of them all. There's an Aussie we all know, where the western breezes blow. From north to south he's known far and wide. Henry Lawson was his name, but he never rose to fame until he crossed beyond the great divide. Until he crossed beyond the great divide.
Seventh Street Caravans have now moved to a brand new location. 11 Clayton Road, Heatherbrae is where you'll find them. Whether you're looking to sell, trade or upgrade, they'll look after you. Check out their range, Silver Valley, Hurricane, Paramount, Road Trip or their flagship Option RV. They won't be beaten on price, so get yourself a knockout deal today. They're open 6 days a week. Why not give them a call on 02-4987-5288 or check out their website, 7thstreetcaravans.com.au. Phil C here, listeners, and this is Roman Oz, and we're in Gulgong, and I'm catching up with the caretaker. Is that right to call you a caretaker? Yes?
Yep, caretaker. That's okay. Fine.
It's caretaker at the Gulgong Showground, Highway Dave. How are you going today, Highway Dave?
Good, mate. Glad to see you.
A fabulous place here in Gulgong, and a credit to this lovely showground. Absolutely fabulous place. And you've been doing a little bit of work here now for a few months, is that right?
Yeah, I've done 2 months out of a 3-month contract.
Uh-huh.
So we've got the place looking nice. The campers are coming back. And we're giving it back for the campers, mate. It's a nice place to come to.
Absolutely fabulous. Well, before we really sort of get into the Gulgong Showground story, tell us a little bit about yourself. Give us the Highway Dave story.
Oh, the Highway Dave story goes back a long, long way, about probably 30 years now. I had a 40-foot Bedford bus, went cruising around, living the dream.
Mm-hmm.
I broke down at Glenbrook in the Blue Mountains, and I'm a Penrith boy. I went to school in Penrith.
Right.
So one afternoon, a group of guys pulled up to say hello to me. It was the couple of the blokes I went to school with,
mm-hmm.
and I never talked to them at school, and they'd hang around, they're going, oh, you're living on the highway, man, and it sort of stuck with me. Then I went on a holiday to Manning Point.
Right, Manning
Middle
Point.
Middle of nowhere, I'm sitting outside the bus,
yep.
Got the country music playing, and all these, hey, highwayman, what are you doing here? And I thought, oh, no, a whole weekend I had to spend with them.
Uh-huh.
And from that day, I've been called Highway Dave.
Highway Dave.
Highway Dave.
Well, I've got to tell you, Dave, your reputation precedes you. It really does. We found out about the Gulgong Showground on Wikicamps. And the comments that we see on Wikicamps and Facebook about you in particular and this campground here in Gulgong is absolutely amazing. You got this fabulous reputation. Now, how does that come about, do you think?
I think it's because I can relate to travellers, grey nomads, campers or whatever. I've been on the road since 1993.
Right.
just I don't like people at the best of times. I don't have a drug problem or an alcohol problem. Uh-huh. I just wanted to get out there and see things.
Right.
Be a free spirit. I'm the last of the free spirits.
Okay, that sounds good. You're not the last of them, but you're a dying breed, that's for sure. Now, how did you end up in Gulgong? How did you get this gig?
I did 9 months down in Nathalia Golf Course as a greenkeeper, and I needed a change, so I put an ad on Gumtree.
Right.
Excellent references from the best of the best, mainly caravan parks, a couple of retirement village, and mm-hmm. I was several offers, but I got a bit picky. I wanted more of a lifestyle than the big bucks.
Right.
So I checked out the showground, and I thought, well, it's a challenge and I can do it.
Yep. Because I understand when you first came here a few months ago, the place was in need of a bit of TLC, wasn't it?
It hadn't had a caretaker for 7 months. The gates were closed. The grass was 2 foot tall. The toilets hadn't been cleaned, and it just had so much potential for the campers, mate. Like,
okay.
It's the sort of place I would go to.
Look, it's the sort of place that I always go to, I've got to tell you. But coming here and seeing that the entire area, it looks like a golf course. You've got the grass perfect. The sights are really great. And your amenities are spotless.
It's a lot of hard work, but it's rewarding.
Mm-hmm.
That the people, they do thank you. And I think a lot of them do appreciate it. There's still showgrounds like this are out there for them.
Okay.
They're not caravan park people.
No.
There's a total difference between a showground and a caravan park.
Absolutely, absolutely. And the beauty about the showgrounds is they really cater for big rigs, don't they?
They do. We've had 40-foot buses in. We've had 40-foot buses with trailers with cars on it.
Yes.
So, there's no size vehicle we couldn't accommodate with power and water.
Uh-huh.
They do have to park where I say to park, though, because we don't want him chewing up my grass or getting bogged.
No, that's fair enough.
But they've got the same freedom as everybody else has.
Yep. Yep. So you've been here now a couple of months and you've more or less brought this place back to life because, as you said, the gates were closed, the grass was 2 foot tall. Now I'm just staring around me and this place is starting to crowd out now. It's late in the afternoon. The vans are arriving. We've got a 40-foot bus over there with a car in tow, motorhomes, caravans. So it's really starting to pick up, which is, I think, all to you. I really have to say that, Dave.
No, I think the town has got its following, being Gulgong. That's the town on the back of the $10 note.
Uh-huh.
Lots of museums, lots of good restaurants, pubs with a good feed at the right price.
Mm-hmm.
I feel that all I'm doing is giving the people somewhere comfortable to come back to and make this their base. Do the tourist thing.
Yep.
But come back to here as your base.
Okay. And using this place as your base, very affordable. Unlike caravan parks, you can pay $40, $50 a night. Here it's like $20 a night.
$20 for power, $15 without power.
Okay.
We don't charge by the number of adults. We don't charge by the size of your vehicle.
Okay.
So and it's just 20 for a power point and a tap.
Yep.
And that's a very, very good price.
That's very affordable.
It is.
$20. It doesn't matter if there's two people here, like Lynn and myself, or if I've got a family van with four kids.
And you can bring the mother-in-law too, mate.
That's another story. I think we'll leave the mother-in-law in Tasmania. And also pets are welcome.
Yep, dogs will be on a leash. We are actually Crown land,
mm-hmm.
so I just have to say that the dog has to be on a leash. I don't enforce it or spy on anybody.
Okay.
And the whole place runs on common sense, mate.
Okay.
We love common sense out here.
Sounds fabulous. Now, you are going to move on shortly because you've done all your work here. There's nothing left for you to do, and what you really like to do is chase a challenge.
It is. It's start with nothing and make it into something. It's an achievement.
Yep.
The kids, I love bragging to the kids. The kids love it when, you know, Poppy's out there doing this and Poppy's doing that.
Okay.
So now I'm open for another challenge, caravan park, campground or whatever.
Okay.
Hit me with the offers, mate. Hit me.
Have you got anything in particular? Like, have you got a direction in particular? Like, you want to go north, you want to go south, you want to get back to the coast?
No,
where would you like to be?
Single bloke, just me and the dog, we can go anywhere in Australia, mate.
Okay.
Preferably New South Wales at the moment.
Uh-huh. Uh-huh.
And whatever comes up, I'll think about it.
And you're up for any challenge?
Any challenge whatsoever, mate.
And you've certainly turned the Gulgong Showground around because, as we said, like it was the gates were shut, the grass was 3 feet tall, and now it's fabulous. And it's all because of you and your lawnmower, mate.
Yep, the old lawnmower, mate. I give the whip cracking, mate. Whip cracking. We won't talk about the lawnmower at the moment.
Okay, all right, fair enough.
It's all about teamwork, mate, but the goal is to make it for everybody else. It's not for us.
Yep.
It's to keep the showground open and keep the people coming back.
Well, look, I don't think you got any reason there why the people aren't going to come back. You've already got a good, solid reputation. You know, the only thing is, if and when you leave, and it's looking like you may, you know, your fans may follow you. You got to give us a destination so that they know that wherever they go, Highway Dave's taking care of it. It's going to be a fabulous place to go to.
Well, I think if I was offered somewhere on the New South Wales coast, close to a beach, it'd be the top of me. I'll check you out list.
Top of the checkout list.
Yeah.
Mate, it's always a pleasure to talk to you. This is the second time we've chatted. And wherever you're going to be, I wish you all the success in the world. Mate, wherever you end up is their gain, and it's going to be the Gulgong Showground's loss, I think, because you've done wonders with this place.
Well, we've all got to be somewhere, and I'll keep in touch with you through your show, mate, and you tell the listeners where to come.
Absolutely, I'll do that. Now, mate, we've got to wind this up. And you know I only play Aussie music, and I know you love your country music. What can I play for you today?
I want a song by Jason Carruthers. He's an up-and-coming artist.
Okay.
I've supported him, I've advised him, and I promote him, and it's a song called Don't Sell Australia Out.
Don't sell Australia around.
Don't sell Australia. Listen to the words, mate, and everyone will relate to it.
Okay.
But not a lot of people are willing to sing about it.
Okay, fabulous. And don't sell Highway Dave out, okay?
No, Highway Dave's a survivor, mate. He'll always be around.
Fabulous stuff. All right, listeners, stick around for more of Roaming Oz straight after Jason Carruthers' Don't Sell Australia Out. Thank you so much, Dave.
No worries, mate. Thank you.
When the shearing sheds are silent and the stock camps full and quiet, when the Gidgee coals no longer glow across the outback night, and the bush is forced to hang a sign, gone broke and won't be back, and spirits fear to find a way beyond the beaten track, when harvesters stand derelict upon the windswept plains, and brave hearts pin their hopes no more on chance of loving rains, when 100 outback settlements are ghost towns overnight, when we've lost the driving heart we had to once more see us right, when pioneer means a stereo and digger some back home, and the outback is behind the house, there's nowhere else to go, Danzac is a biscuit brand, probably foreign owned. And education really means brainwash and neatly clothed. When you have to bake a loaf of bread to make a decent crust, and our heritage once enshrined in gold is crumbling to dust, and old folk pay their camping fees on land for which they fought, and fishing is a great escape, this until you get caught. When you see our kids with Yankee caps, resentment in their eyes, and the soaring crime and hopeless hearts is no longer a surprise, when the name of Irene Williams is a yuppie clothing brand, and not a product of our heritage that grew off this great land. An offering a hand makes people think you'll amputate, and two dogs meeting in the street is what you call a mate, when political correctness has replaced all common sense, when you're forced to see it their way, there's no sitting on the fence.